He belonged in uniform. His country was at war. He was 36 years old and bursting with vitality. Before going to work in the morning at the Navy Department, he often played a round of golf. On weekends, he rarely got in less than 36 holes. During the week, he worked out with Walter Camp, the football coach and fitness enthusiast. His four distant cousins, Archibald, Kermit, Theodore Jr., and Quentin, sons of Franklin's idol, former President Theodore Roosevelt, had all enlisted. On the very day that war had been declared, April 6, 1917, the Roosevelt clan gathered at the home of T.R.'s married daughter, Alice Roosevelt Longworth. There, the former commander-in-chief seized Franklin by the shoulders, fixed him with his myopic gaze, and pleaded with him to resign as Assistant Secretary of the Navy. "You must get into uniform at once," T.R. urged. "You must get in." Franklin was all too willing. Patriotism was the main reason, but politics intruded as well. In 1898, when America had gone to war against Spain over Cuba, T.R. had resigned from the very Navy post Franklin now held. He had formed his own regiment, the Rough Riders. He had worn the uniform, known war, and subsequently reached the political pinnacle. T.R.'s trajectory was not lost on his ambitious young relative. Franklin's chief, Navy Secretary Josephus Daniels, easily detected the parallels. Theodore left the position of Assistant Secretary to become a Rough Rider, later Governor of New York and then President, and both had served in the legislature of New York, Daniels noted. Franklin actually thought fighting in the war was the necessary step toward reaching the White House. Franklin submitted his resignation as Assistant Secretary in order to enlist. But when the letter landed on President Woodrow Wilson's desk, the President rejected what he considered military romanticism. He told Secretary Daniels to inform his subordinate that he was no different from any draftee. "Neither you nor I nor Franklin Roosevelt has the right to select the place of service," he warned. "Tell the young man to stay where he is." Unfazed, Roosevelt next went to Wilson personally, only to be turned down again. As the country entered its 15th month of the war, a still frustrated Franklin managed to wangle an assignment that lifted him, if not exactly to combatant status, at least to something more than a desk-bound civilian. He urged Secretary Daniels to allow him to go to Europe, to look into our naval administration in order to work more closely with the other services. The essentially pacifist Daniels eventually yielded to Franklin's ceaseless importuning, even allowing his assistant to write his own orders, essentially a blank check to pursue such other purposes as may be deemed expedient upon your arrival. Franklin confided to his wife Eleanor that he had been promised a commission as a Navy Lieutenant Commander upon his return. That summer of 1918, as the day of his departure approached, his behavior began taking on an air of mystery. He told Eleanor only that he must leave her alone with their five children, but could not disclose where he was going or for how long. She was not to see him off, since the mission was secret. "Don't tell a soul," he warned her, "not even Mama." Franklin had one more goodbye to make before he left, one unknown to Eleanor, and one that moved him to mixed longing and pride. Meeting secretly, he and a beautiful woman made impassioned promises of letters to be exchanged, how this was to be safely carried out during his absence, and what needed to be resolved on his return. For Franklin Roosevelt was in love.